Chapter 12. Scourge and I found the silken shawl in a much nicer part of the Yenny City. The inn was in a large building with a pink stone facade, and it had trailing vines of flowering plants that hung from the windows and eaves. From the street, we could hear rhythmic music playing inside, and I was looking forward to a night of relaxation before our big mission. As we walked through the door, the smell of burning incense assaulted us, and the music of hand drums doubled in volume. I looked around and saw the left half of the large main room on the first floor was covered in low tables that surrounded a dance floor, where two night elf dancing girls performed for a small crowd. The other side was a sitting area where servers poured tea and delivered small trays of food for guests. The walls were covered in elaborate tapestries depicting various romantic scenes of elven men and women meeting in walled gardens, and the upholstery and decor were all in shades of green and blue, offset by accents of deep purples. Even the tiles on the floor were laid in intricate patterns resembling flowers, and the whole place screamed of luxury and sensory overload. No sooner were Scourge and I through the door than a dwarf in a soft green tunic and deep blue trousers approached us. The dwarven man had golden blonde hair that fell in natural ringlets, and a well-groomed, carefully braided beard.
"May I help you, gentlemen?"
the audacious dwarf asked in a gruff voice.
"We are part of Lady Nalame's party,"
Scourge said with a graceful bow.
"Her ladyship mentioned she was expecting two others,"
the blonde dwarf commented as he looked us up and down. We were both a little rumpled from the brawl in the tavern, and admittedly stood out in the high-end establishment.
"I'll take you to the ladies' rooms."
The elegant dwarf bowed and motioned for us to follow him. Scourge and I were taken up to the second floor to a suite of rooms where the rest of the party was waiting. The sitting room was cozy, with a fire crackling in the hearth in one corner of the room. The furniture and decor were all in the embellished Yenny style, mostly in tones of yellow and gold. Nylamane Bakoth talked quietly in comfortable chairs near the fire, while Amrila lounged on a low-backed sofa and looked profoundly bored. When Scourge and I followed the dwarf into the room, the others turned to look at us, and I could see the relief on the red-skinned woman's face.
"Your ladyship,"
the dwarven man said with a bow,
"I believe the guests you were waiting for have arrived."
"Thank you."
Nylamane inclined her head from her seat. Then the dwarf turned on his heels, left, and closed the door behind him. Once the blonde man had left, Scourge and I joined the others near the fire. Scourge sprawled in one of the spare chairs, while I sat next to Amrila on the sofa.
"What happened?"
the horned woman asked as she looked me up and down.
"There was a little dust-up in a tavern."
I shrugged, but I could see the pout forming on the Zenkari woman's face.
"You got in a fight without me?"
Amrila asked in a disappointed tone.
"Just a little drunken brawl."
Scourge sighed as he sank deeper into his chair and pushed his feet toward the fire.
"Nothing very notable."
"I love drunken brawls."
The horned woman crossed her arms.
"You're not allowed to leave me behind ever again. You go and have a lovely time and I'm stuck here surrounded by silk pillows and perfume. It's not fair."
"I promise I won't leave you behind again," I snorted as I put my arm around the Zenkari woman. "I think we were successful, though. One of Scourge's contacts is getting the map for us."
"So, what's next?"
the Dolrath woman asked as she watched Amrila and I out of the corner of her eye.
"We have most of a day to rest, get any supplies we feel we might still need, and maybe enjoy this fine establishment a little,"
Scourge replied.
"Good."
Amrila suddenly stood and turned to look at me on the sofa.
"You can start making things up to me then."
The red-skinned woman's expression made it very clear how she wanted me to make it up to her, and I couldn't help but smile. "If you'll excuse us," I said to the group. Bakoth smirked, and Scourge waved a dismissive hand as his eyes slipped closed. But there was a look on Nylame's face that I couldn't quite place before Amrila took my arm and led me out of the room through one of the several doors. The adjoining room was a large bedroom, with a big four-poster bed, and the teal and emerald green lengths of silk hung from the ceiling around the mattress. The bed was covered in pillows and a down comforter, and around it were small, upholstered chairs and round tables that had bowls of fruit and a decanter of wine sitting on them. There was a wash basin in one corner of the room, and a small fireplace provided a comfortable warmth. The red-skinned woman looked around the beautiful room as she picked up an exotic piece of fruit and absentmindedly rolled it around in her hands. Then she turned, saw me watching her from the doorway, and smiled.
When I was a girl, I dreamed of growing up and sleeping in a room like this.
Emery LePerd.
But as beautiful as this room is, it cannot compare to the home you've given me.
I'm glad I make you happy, I said, as I walked across the room and put my hands on the horned woman's slim waist. But it's you and Ibsith who make that house a home. I gently started to tug at the fastenings of Amrila's armor, while she stared up at me with an expression that was half amusement, half challenge, as she took a bite of the soft yellow and peach-colored fruit. I bit my lip as I watched the Zinkari woman's sharp teeth sink into the flesh of the fruit, and a trickle of its clear juices ran down her chin. Then I leaned down and took a bite from the other side of the mysterious fruit, and its sweet and tangy flavor exploded across my tongue. As I pulled away, one of Amrila's buckles came loose in my hand, and I started to work on the next.
Patience, partner.
The red-skinned woman breathed, and she handed me the fruit as she sauntered over to the wash basin. I took another bite of the strange fruit, which tasted something like a star fruit, and then I started to remove my cloak and the dwarven breastplate. Out of the corner of my eye, I watched as my wife made a show of slowly taking off her leathers. Amrila bent over at the waist to undo her boots, and she made sure I had a good view of her tight, firm ass. I placed my breastplate on the floor next to the bed and pulled my shirt over my head. And then I turned to see the horned woman peel off her snug breastplate. Her small, perfect breasts bounced lightly as they came free of the armor, and my hardening cock throbbed at the sight. I started to unbuckle my pants, then I placed the Glock in its holster on the table next to the bed. Then I looked up again as the Zinkari woman wiggled out of her leather pants that tried to cling to her smooth, reddish skin, and desire ignited in my belly. Amrila, now fully naked and unself-conscious, poured some water from the large metal jug into the ceramic basin and took a clean cloth from the stack of folded washcloths on the same side table. Then the horned woman looked over her shoulder, and she made sure I was watching her before she soaked the cloth and brought it dripping to her bare neck and chest. My wife was clearly putting on a show for me, so I sat down on the end of the bed and leaned back to enjoy it. As the red-skinned beauty dragged the wet cloth across her breasts, her skin glistened with moisture, and I could feel the blood begin to rush to my crotch. Amrila moved the cloth down to her stomach and then between her legs with a soft sigh, and I could feel my erection starting to press against my fatigue pants.
Now.
The Zinkari woman grinned mischievously as she blatantly moved the wet cloth against her pussy.
How are we going to make use of this big bed?
Amrila brought one hand up to lightly stroke her nipple as she continued to touch herself with the washcloth, and I just needed to touch her now. I've a perfect idea, I growled, and I stood and walked over to the basin as well. Come here. I roughly grabbed the Zinkari woman's hips, pulled her to me, and caused her to drop her washcloth, which fell to the floor with a wet plop. Amrila ran her hands along my bare chest, and I could feel the cool dampness of her skin. I pulled the red-skinned woman over to the bed and sat her down on the edge, and her teardrop-shaped breasts rose and fell as her breathing became more rapid and excited. Next, I took hold of one of the lengths of silk that hung from the four-poster bed and tied it securely around one of Amrila's wrists. Then I tied her other hand with another yard of silk. The horned woman gave both sides a playful little tug to test it out.
Oh no.
The Zinkari woman sighed with mock innocence.
Now you have me at your mercy. Whatever shall I do?
I knelt between my wife's firm legs and ran my hands along her supple thighs where goosebumps appeared in response to my touch. I want you to beg for mercy. I rumbled as I parted the red-skinned woman's legs and looked down at the sparse strawberry blonde hair just above the brief lips of her sweet pussy.
Never.
Amrila breathed, and she grinned down at me with a challenge in her dark eyes. I leaned forward like I was about to go down on her, and watched as she threw her head back. But I stopped short, and let her feel my hot breath on her clit. The Zinkari woman shuddered and gasped, and then I moved one hand up and teased around the tight opening of her cunt.
Do your worst, Goblin King.
Amrila joked in a trembling voice.
I'll never ask for mercy.
We'll see about that. I slipped the tip of my finger inside her and made a slight circular motion. The horned woman arched her back, so I began to move my finger in and out of her slowly.
Harder, Eddie.
Amrila groaned as she began to move her hips. Not yet, I growled, and then I licked at a bead of moisture that had appeared from her slick hole. I trailed my tongue up and over her pink clit and pushed my finger deeper into her, and I slowly began to quicken the pace of my tongue as I licked and teased my wife. Then I pushed a second finger inside her, and her walls immediately clamped down around my digits. Amrila mewled.
Yes, harder, Eddie, fuck me, use me.
Say please, I said from between her legs. Say please and I'll fuck you as hard as you want me to. Then I started to suck on her clit as I curled my fingers inside her to find her G-spot. And Amrila started to buck her hips as I found it and relentlessly moved my fingers back and forth.
Oh, Eddie.
The horned woman keened.
Please?
There was the sweet gush of juices as the Zinkari woman climaxed, and pride swelled in my chest as her body bent and spasmed for almost a solid minute from the pleasure I gave her. But I wasn't done yet. Fuck, I need you. I stood and stared down at my sexy wife as her naked body still trembled from the orgasm I'd just given her, and her arms were still tied with the silken drapes around the bed. I unzipped my pants and let them fall to the ground as my impressive, throbbing erection stood at full mast. Then I crawled onto the bed and moved in behind the red-skinned woman, and I lifted Amrila up by her waist, sat down on the edge of the bed, and lowered her onto my hard cock. Amrila squealed with delight as I entered her.
Oh, I love it when your big dick isn't inside of me.
I took hold of her hips and started to guide her back and forth, and I thrust forward as she slid back to meet me. God, you feel so good. I snarled as her tight pussy spasmed with pleasure around my cock. I love fucking your tight pussy. As the horned woman began to bounce up and down rhythmically, I moved my hands from her hips up to her firm breasts. I could feel her pert, tawny nipples between my fingers, and I began to gently pinch and caress them while she took in my cock. Amrila started to come down onto my lap with greater force, and our skin loudly slapped together as I felt a sweet pressure build in my core. But I held back from coming until I made the half-demon woman come one more time.
Yes!
Amrila moaned as I slipped one hand from her breast and began to play with her clit again.
Oh, fill me with your seed. Come inside me, Eddie, please.
You first, I growled as I flicked her clitoris and bucked my hips up to hit that spot inside her. Come for me, Amrila.
Oh, Eddie.
The red-skinned woman's tunnel tightened and clenched as she came hard, and as her body stiffened in orgasm, I released my seed inside of her, like a fire hose cranked on full blast. We both cried out each other's names as we felt the sweet ecstasy of ultimate pleasure, and our climaxes seemed to only grow more intense for the first dozen seconds, before we finally peaked as we clutched each other desperately. Then, we slowly descended from our peaks as we took ragged breaths.
Fuck! That was amazing, Eddie.
Amrila slumped back against my chest, with her legs still spread around my thighs, and I planted gentle kisses along the back of her neck as I felt our combined fluids drip down my softening shaft and onto our bed. Yeah, it was, I whispered in her ear before I kissed her more and more. We both took another few minutes to pant and catch our breath before I untied her hands from their bindings. Then we both fell onto the bed in a tangle of arms and legs, and I fell into a contented sleep within minutes. After a few hours of peaceful sleep in my Zinkari wife's arms, we got up, dressed, gathered our things, and then joined the others in the sitting room. Bakath was already sitting at a small round table, drinking tea and eating slices of fruit, as a serving girl arranged trays of food at a side table, and then she curtsied and scurried from the room. My beautiful wife went over to the side table and started to gather various pastries and fruit onto her plate. I found an unobtrusive spot to set up and clean and check my guns, but I made sure to keep my cloak close by in case a servant or someone came in before I was done. After a few minutes, Nylame came out and saw I had the Galil partly disassembled.
"What are you doing?"
the warrior woman asked with a curious tilt of her head. "Cleaning my rifle," I said. "We should probably clean and check yours, too. It's good to do it after you shoot it. Make sure everything is in working order. I'll show you what to do."
"I will get my rifle, then,"
the dark-haired woman replied. When Nylame came back with her AK, I showed her how to take it apart and what to look for when she was cleaning it. And soon the room smelled like gun cleaner and oil.
"By the gods," Scourge complained as he entered the room. "What is that awful smell?"
"Sorry," I grinned and shrugged. "I should have waited until everyone had eaten before I did this. I just wanted to be sure I had the time before we leave. I actually love the smell."
"I do too, Eddie."
Nylame smiled at me. Just then there was a soft knock on the door, and I quickly threw my cloak over the gun parts on the floor as Amrila looked over her shoulder at me on the way to the door. Once she was sure I had everything covered, the Zinkari woman opened the door a crack to see who it was.
"A message has arrived for one of your party,"
I heard a gruff voice say through the door.
"Thank you,"
Amrila replied as she snatched a note from the blonde dwarven man I'd met when I arrived, and then she closed the door again.
"It is addressed to Scorello the Grey,"
the horned woman said. The Zinkari man held out a graceful hand, and Amrila handed him the note as he sat at the table, crossed his legs, and poured himself some tea.
"Oh," the dark-skinned man said cheerfully. "It's from Felpip. Seems he's had an early success. I wonder if that means he'll try to shake us down for more money. He asks that we meet him in a very seedy establishment in the Eastern District. How exciting."
"I'm willing to reward initiative," I chuckled and slipped the rail on my Galil back in place. "We'll leave to meet him after everyone's had a chance to eat and I've finished this up."
"I'm coming this time,"
the red-skinned woman said in a firm tone around a mouthful of pastry. "I know, partner," I replied with a wink at my Zinkari wife. When I turned away from Amrila, I caught Nylame staring at the two of us, but she quickly averted her blue eyes to the disassembled rifle before her. The warrior had caught on pretty quickly on how to assemble her AK, and she listened without asking many questions as I helped her put everything back together. It was pretty impressive. Once both rifles and my Glock were ready to go, Amrila, Scourge, and I all left the silken shawl while Bakath and Nylame were kind enough to deliver the lions to Della the Butcher. Scourge led the horned woman and I through the city, and I was in awe of how beautiful the capital of the Yeni territory was. The domed buildings, the carefully sculpted facades, and all the bright colors were really something to behold. But as we entered the Eastern District, I noticed how all that changed. The buildings slowly became more run down, and there were chips and cracks in their facades. Near the silken shawl, almost everyone I saw were night elves, dressed in fine clothing as they hurried about whatever business they had. Then, I started to see more of the other races as we passed through the markets Scourge and I had visited the day before. Then, there were almost no night elves, and I started to notice more orcs and a few Zinkari. There were also more people loitering outside of houses and shops.
"I remember when this was a lively place," the dark-skinned man sighed as we passed a group of dirty children playing on the street.
The kids scattered and ran out of the street except for one orc boy that deftly grabbed his rough leather ball and glared at us until we passed.
"What happened?"
I asked in a quiet voice so I wouldn't be overheard, since I suspected I already knew the answer.
"This neighborhood has always been poor,"
Amrila replied in an undertone.
But under the Mad Chief, they've had less and less every year. The spirit of the people has been dying piece by piece since that man seized power.
If only Onda had survived, Scourge lamented. I think he would have been a good chief.
Who was Onda? I asked as we passed a group of old men who sat outside of their cracked houses and smoked pipes together.
He was one of Ersinger's brothers,
Amrila answered.
The one who was supposed to take over when the old chief died.
He was your Ipsith's brother,
Scourge added quietly as he leaned toward me.
Her full brother.
She's never talked about that, I said as much to myself as anyone else. But then I passed and narrowed my eyes at the Zinkari man. Wait, what do you mean my Ipsith?
Please don't ever mistake me for stupid, Scourge smiled. It's no secret you rescued her, and it isn't a far leap to guess the rest of it. Just because I have no interest in romantic entanglements doesn't mean I'm oblivious to them. But the streets of the capital are probably not the best place to continue this discussion. Plus, we're here.
The Zinkari man pointed out a nondescript door, and then he stepped up to it and knocked in a strange pattern. After a tense pause, the door swung open, and the most disreputable-looking night elf I'd ever seen was on the other side. The man was slim, to the point of being painfully thin, and he had a shock of raven-black hair that was shaved on only one side. One of his eyes was clearly made of glass, but it was finely painted to resemble a pitworm's eye.
Skrello, my good man!
The sketchy elf said through several missing teeth.
I haven't seen your sour face in ages.
Perhaps it was your smell that kept me away, Galli.
The dark-skinned man smirked.
When was the last time you bathed?
The ladies like my natural musk,
Galli replied with a smirk of his own.
Don't they, Amrila?
How you discuss the she-trolls of the gloom is entirely your business, you ugly fuck.
My wife shot back with a wide grin.
Glad to see you haven't lost your edge.
Galli nodded with approval.
Come on in, come on in.
We followed the seedy elf through the door, and as I passed him, he looked me up and down.
Who's your friend?
Galli asked as he stared hard at me and tried to get a peek under my hood.
Edward, I replied simply. He's the deposed goblin king of the Tectris Forest, here to hire an army of mercenaries to help him reclaim his birthright.
Scourge added in a jaunty tone.
Doesn't quite look like a goblin,
the elf with the glass eye said. Do you make a habit of traveling to the Twilight Region? I snickered.
Not really,
Galli shrugged.
Fair enough. This way, your highness.
The one-eyed man led us down some stairs and through a rough, winding hallway, and I could hear the murmur of voices nearby. It sounded like a large crowd. Eventually, the hallway led into the big open space that had been carved out of the bedrock of the cavern. There were lanterns hung along the walls, which provided a dim light, and one end of the large room was set up as a tavern. But all along the walls were booths and carpets with various items laid out for sale, and that was the moment I realized I was in a literal den of thieves. I kept a close hand on my galil under my cloak as I looked around for the scarred gnome.
How do we find him?
I asked the dark-skinned man. Is there a specific place we're supposed to go?
I imagine he'll be on the lookout for us,
Scourge replied as he moved toward a table near the makeshift tavern. Amrila and I followed the Zinkari man and sat down, and I tried not to look around too much, since I knew that would make me stand out. But the cave-like space was filled with strange people and interesting sights. One man had little cages hanging from his stall, and they were all filled with tarantulas, mice, and bats. I wasn't sure whether they were being sold as pets or as food. A dwarven woman just a few spaces down rattled something into a stone cup and then spilled the contents on the dirty rug in front of her. The cup was filled with bones, and the dwarf looked down intently at them as if they held some kind of great meaning to her. It wasn't long before I saw a small, hooded figure approach our table, and once he was a few feet from us, the gnome threw back his hood and hopped up onto a chair with the practiced ease of a man who'd lived in a world built for taller beings.
Good to see you both,
Felpip greeted the group.
And lovely to meet you, miss.
Emeril inclined her head to the scarred man.
I take it you've had a stroke of luck?
Scourge asked with a raised eyebrow.
Indeed I have,
the gnome replied with false modesty.
And I have a little bonus information for you, if you have some extra coin.
Let's start with the map and go from there. I held up my hand with an expectant expression on my face, even though he probably couldn't see it beneath my hood.
Here you are.
Felpip reached into the inside of his cloak and pulled out a rolled-up sheet of thick, yellow paper. As I took the rolled parchment from the short man, I looked over at my companions. Is it safe to look at this here? I asked.
Just a brief glance.
Amrila nodded as she covertly glanced around.
So that you're sure it's what you wanted?
I unrolled the crackling paper and took a quick peek. The paper had the floor plan of a simple three-floor structure on it. There were separate drawings for the first and second floor, as well as a basement, but there was nothing written on the paper about what building the floor plan was for. I handed the map over to Scourge to see what he thought, and the Zinkari man took the parchment and looked at it for a moment while Felpip flagged down a serving girl from the tavern counter.
A round of ale for the table, please,
the gnome said to the elven woman that came over to serve us. As the serving girl walked away, the Zinkari man rolled up the paper and nodded to me. All right. I reached into my pouch for some gold coins. A deal's a deal. Then I handed the scarred man the 5 coins I'd promised him, plus 1 more, since he got it to us quickly. I added as the gnomish man counted the coins. Now, what's this about bonus information?
We all know what that map is.
Felpip scoffed.
And I might have been able to find out a couple of things that would be of interest to someone planning to go there in the near future.
How much do you want, Felpip?
Scourge sighed as the serving girl came back with a tray full of ale mugs.
You could get this round.
The scarred man smiled slyly.
And maybe 1 or 2 more gold coins.
I handed the elven server several silver coins, and she winked at me before she walked back to the bar. Here, I said as I handed Felpip 2 more gold. And it better be worth it, otherwise my wife might get upset, and she's been known to pluck out a man's eyes when she's upset.
Or I could give you a scar to match the other side.
Amrila threatened in a sweet tone, and she placed a hand lightly on her black pommeled sword.
Come on, girl!
Felpip smiled at the Zinkari woman, but he swallowed nervously.
You know the guild won't allow any such nonsense down here.
The guild? I repeated as I looked from Amrila to Scourge.
This is the headquarters of a thieves' guild.
The horned woman replied.
Which means certain members have a certain amount of protection here. But that doesn't count if you get your ass kicked for swindling another thief.
It's in the charter, the Zinkari man said in a dry tone. Not that anyone has ever read it.
My information's good,
Felpip said as he held up his hands in a defensive gesture.
The first bit is you're in luck. The owner isn't home right now. He's in the city at the moment, and there are only a few servants there when he's away.
And the second bit? I asked with an arched eyebrow.
If you're going there,
the scarred gnome said as he leaned forward conspiratorially and lowered his voice.
It might be worth your time to check out the cellar. There are rumors the owner has a secret prison, a hidden sub-basement. Supposedly he likes to throw people down there who disagree with him, if that's of any interest to you.
I wondered if that would also be where Ursinger would hide evidence that he'd broken a sacred treaty with the other Night Elf tribes. Thank you, Felpip, I said as I stood, reached into my coin pouch, and slapped 1 final silver on the table. For your next round. Then Amrila and Scourge both got up from the table and followed me as I headed toward the street outside.
What's the rush, Edward?
The dark-skinned man asked as he caught up to me. This is perfect, I said, as I tried to control my sense of excitement. And I want to get the others and get out into the woods to finish planning before anyone figures out we're here. To be honest, I don't entirely trust that Felpip guy.
He's part of the resistance, Scourge countered. But he's also a thief, and therefore not to be trusted.
You're a thief too, I snorted.
That is true,
The Zinkari man nodded.
But I would never betray you. You're the only source I have for that incredible Earl's tea, and I wouldn't jeopardize that for all the gold in the gloom.
Let's go get Nilomane Bakoth, I chuckled. We have a burglary to plan.